All right, thank you. Title of my talk is Short-Term Psychological Benefits to Personal Genetic Testing Findings from the PGEN Study. So this will be the last one on PGEN today. And I have no relevant financial relationships to disclose. So you've all probably seen these kinds of graphs as the costs of and technologies for sequencing and genetic testing has improved. There's been an explosion of tools that can examine DNA looking for, that can provide risk information for both common and rare diseases. And I think this is also, I've also thrown some, put some pictures of, I think this has been accompanied by improvements in technologies to collect and store DNA. But some of the most exciting parts of this whole these advances has been the ability to examine the genome and provide assessments for future risk of disease. Now, a lot of the discussion around genetic testing often feels like this, that it's on the surface seems like a very good idea to learn what your disease risks are in the future, but when you actually, that going through this, that these kinds of risk assessments can be dangerous for their potential to, for people to misunderstand their risks and be psychologically harmed by the and distressed by the kinds of information they have received. Our group has spent a lot of time, as well as many others, have actually spent a lot of time looking at this in clinical settings. And this is a kind of this is an example of the kind of results you actually see in most studies looking at genetic susceptibility testing. That it's really whether you're at increased risk for the disease, baseline risk for disease, or don't even get a genetic risk assessment. In general, people's general levels of anxiety and depression tend not to be affected by the kinds of genetic information they receive. Now, we've talked, a lot of this session is focused on consumer testing, consumer genetic testing, and this is, represents a very different context in, from clinical settings, in large part because the in most consumer settings, the we've eliminated a trained professional a genetic counselor who has been trained to deliver these results. A lot of these are just delivered online without the benefit of somebody to help interpret the information. I think the other thing to consider when it comes to genetic testing through consumer services is the amount of information that these kinds of services provide, that instead of being very focused on a specific syndrome within a family, that there tend to be almost all of these services give profiles for dozens of conditions, and the amount of information has the potential to overwhelm and confuse patients and consumers. So as part of the PGEN study, we've been looking at this empirically. I won't go into great detail again about the PGEN study, other than that we enrolled users of Pathway Genomics in 23andMe. You've seen this slide that after people register for the service, they complete a baseline survey where they're providing their attitudes, baseline health, expectations about testing. They then get their profiles from the companies, and then 2 to 3 weeks later, we administer a web-based follow-up survey, and then again, readminister that survey 6 months after results disclosure. The analytic set that I'm going to talk about is a little different in that I'm looking at psychological responses to the information. So these are people who have completed either the 2 to 3 week follow-up or the 6 month follow-up, and so we lose some older adults and less educated adults are more likely to be lost to follow-up. But otherwise, similar profile to what you've seen before, around age 50 on average, 60% female, primarily white population. Now, the psychological measures that we administered were, we had two validated measures of general anxiety and general depression. So the Generalized Anxiety Disorder Scale, it's a two-item measure for anxiety, a two-item patient health questionnaire, which measures depression. We also created what we call a positive affect scale, which is two items that were adapted from the Mental Health Index, which asked, I felt calm or peaceful. And then lastly, we also administered a scale adapted from the MICRA, the Multidimensional Impact of Cancer Risk Assessment, to look at distress specific to the risk information participants received. And so this is something without specific cutoffs for a mood disorder, but something that's usually more sensitive to differences in risk information and cohort differences. We compared psychological measures and changes from baseline against the actual reported risks on people's reports, and we looked at this a couple different ways, including the percentage of conditions on the reports which showed them to be at increased risk for disease. We also looked at it reported risk as an average of the numeric risk estimates that were given to participants on their reports. We also compared psychological responses against a measure of perceived risks. Stacy talked about this, and this is where we just ask a one-item question: out of how many genetic results you received, how many were of the following? How many indicated that you were at increased risk? With response options being none, a few, many, and all. And so these are the results, and I actually combined the big picture view of how people scored on our anxiety and depression measures, because you can see that the cutoff, this is actually a 1-4 scale with a cutoff for concern of being at scores of 2.5 or higher, but mean scores for both anxiety and depression were well below cutoffs, which would be considered clinically meaningful and indicative of a mood disorder. When we zoom in at this, we actually see that there are very small but statistically significant decreases in anxiety at the 2 to 3 week follow-up, which disappear by the 6-month follow-up. Similarly, small drops in general depression at the 2 to 3 week follow-up, which disappear by 6 months. Not unexpectedly, increases in positive moods at the in positive affect 2 to 3 weeks after the results disclosure, which disappear by the 6-month follow-up. Now, when we look at test-specific distress, I did want to present a histogram of where people were reporting their distress, because over half of people reported experiencing distressing thoughts rarely or never. And what we see when we compare this against the actual risk information participants were receiving on their reports is actually no correlation between the number of conditions on the reports indicating increased risk disease and their levels of test-specific distress. Now, I omitted some of the other graphs of this because they all look basically like this, that whether you had less than 10% of your conditions indicating increased risk or 30% of your conditions indicating increased risk, you had about the same levels of distress at follow-up. That said, when we compare distress levels against their perceptions of risk, we do see a moderate correlation between risk perceptions and distressing thoughts, that people that perceived most of the results to be indicating increased risk had higher distress levels than participants perceiving none of their results as increased risk. Now, a couple limitations to our study, that we are using a self-selected sample. These are people who have opted for testing, and when we look at many of our studies examining psychological responses, these are people that have time to know that they can cope with this kind of information. The statistical models that I've used have explained minimal amounts of variance in psychological outcome scores. I've tried to replicate similar analyses on other papers in terms of how I'm comparing distress scores against risk, but this is a very complicated analysis given the amount of information participants are receiving. But overall, I do think that we can say that that there are positive and transient psychological responses to the information that people receive through personal genetic testing, that there are transient improvements in overall mood, no evidence of increased harms or benefits overall at 6 months, and that mean scores were well within what we'd consider safe ranges at all time points. that test-specific distress was related to risk perceptions, but not actual risk scores. And in conclusion, at least with these consumers, that personal genomic testing did not increase psychological risks and provided temporary benefits. And the other, I think, take-home message is that responses are shaped by the interpretations of results and not the results necessarily themselves. This is something that we're going to have to reconcile with prior research. The only other study that's really looked at this is Cinnamon Bloss's analysis of users of the Health Compass, what used to be a Navigenics health profile, and they actually did see small but statistically significant correlations between a distress scores at follow-up and the percentage of results indicating increased risk. So there's a little bit of work to be done, but why don't I cut off here and thank my collaborators and then field any questions. Not those specific risks and burdens. I've done a lot of, most of my time has been spent looking at genetic testing for Alzheimer's disease risk, and then I have done more crude analyses of the correlation between psychological outcomes and baseline risks and burdens perceptions. And I have not seen a correlation between that. But I think there is a very sophisticated story that people go into this. From the prior presentations, some people are looking at this as a risk assessment. Some people are looking at this as gentertainment. They're trying to explain something in their family. And I do think that this is a crude analysis, and actual psychological responses is going to take a. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, well, the only thing I've seen with regards to communication is that it actually helps people cope with indications of increased risk when they share the results. Now, it's very different context sharing your cardiovascular disease risk than an HIV result. It's something I'll need to think a little more about. I haven't broken it down by age cohort. I haven't seen any correlation between carrier status and psychological outcomes, but I haven't looked at that by different age strata. You do see people with stronger emotional responses and generally more positive ones if they've looked at the ancestry and things like... what's the other? There's the things that aren't health risk related, but that's. I think it's a very. It could be a little misleading. I mean, those people tend to be healthier. They tend to, and so I don't want to. I do think that there, the responses are shaped by expectations and what you want to get out of it. But I need to, before I present very misleading information, I need to think very hard about the right conceptual model. All right, thank you.